long national nightmare is over. The Initial Reaction podcast is back. Thank goodness. I'm J.R. Radcliffe from Lake Country Publications and now Newspapers.
With a well-rested voice, I am J.P. Cadoran from Spectrum Sports, here to save the world and insult J.R. whenever possible.
I purposely waited several weeks to even contact you about podcasting, thinking at some point you would text me or reach out to me and say, JR, what's going on? I miss you. Did the podcast stop? Nothing. Crickets. Not a word. Finally, after like 3-4 weeks, I was like, JP, where are you? Let's do this again. So my hope and dream was to get JP to notice me.
Well, it's hard not to notice you when every 4 seconds over the weekend you were sending out a link with another story from lacrosse.
Did I do too much? Was it too overbearing?
It wasn't too much, but it was certainly a lot.
It was certainly a lot.
Tell me about it, friend. That I have only been to state track once. You love it. Ready, set, go.
Twitter is a difficult medium because there are people who follow me because they like to talk about Brewers with me. I'm part of, I would say, Brewers Twitter, maybe a peripheral member, but still. And then there are people who follow for the prep sports stuff. Well, you know, understandably, if you don't follow for the prep sports, you got way more than you bargained for because I was doing a lot of state track. I think my story count was 20. A lot of communities represented. I was the only writer from our operation there. A lot to talk about. I love covering it. It's the fifth straight year I've been there, and I love it, love it, love it, love it, love it. It's awesome. We talked about wrestling before. Similar vibe, where state champions just start coming out of the woodwork. You know, every few minutes, you've got another state champion, another story. The tricky part is to find the story, because obviously, yes, I went fast for those 12 seconds there isn't a whole lot of story in the actual competition. It's all about sort of the things leading up to it. So had a lot of fun, talked to a lot of kids, and was pretty happy with everything.
So peeling the curtain back a little bit, how in the world do you keep track of it? Because there are event after event after event after event, and you have, you have a pretty good beat. You know which schools are yours. It's not like that's tough where you need to think, oh, wait, is this mine or not? But, like, do you prep for it for, like, a couple days so that you have a schedule with everything going on? Or how do you know where to turn your attention?
The schedule is given to you. It's on the back of your credential even. So you kind of have a sense. And, I mean, track meets all basically run the same way. So you do have a sense of what events are coming up. And yes, I do a little bit of prep to know exactly. I mean, obviously for each event, you want to know who are the chances of a state championship. If somebody won, would that be a surprise? I didn't hit everything. I missed the big one that I missed was Edgardo Valdez of Shorewood diving at the finish line in the 800 and coming up just short of a major upset. He was seeded 10th, and the guy that was seeded first ended up winning right at the line. And I didn't see that race because I was talking to other kids. He came through with the medal, and I didn't realize that he was a top finisher. I mean, it's like sometimes stuff does just fly over my head, and I totally regret not talking to that guy. He had a big bruise on the side of his body because he had, dove onto the track surface. So that was the big miss for me. I was disappointed I didn't talk to that guy. That was foolish, but – you know, it's not even just about, I don't even get to see half the events because the kids win, there's a little bit of a wait. They end up on the podium in the middle of the infield, and then they come through the area where the journalists are and the people are, and that's when you get to talk to them. Well, that might very well be during the next race. In fact, is frequently during the next race. So I don't see a lot of, you know, thank goodness you don't need to do a lot of play by play in track and field because it's only X number of seconds or X number of minutes. But yeah, I did miss a lot. It's sort of about knowing when the athletes are coming through and not as much about when the actual races are.
And so I don't know a ton about it, but from following what I follow, it seems like you should be talking about a certain lady from Whitefish Bay.
Camille Davra, the queen of lacrosse. Second athlete ever to win the dreaded triple, the distance triple of the 800, 1600, and 3200 meter races. Insane amount of work over 2 days' time. She's got 10 state titles to her name. One relay in there that she won her fourth consecutive 800 and 1600. This was the first time she tried to win all three. As I think I said, only one other runner in history has done that. That's crazy incredible, and she's great. What a great interview, great kid. She was our Journal Sentinel Track and Field Athlete of the Year. It's an absolute great call. She is awesome. And so it was really great to talk to her and how, you know, effusive she was and happy she was. And to see an athlete at that level is kind of the cool thing about the state meet. And there's always more than one superstar athlete that you start to whisper the word Olympics because that's the sort of ceiling you're looking at with some of these kids. Brooke Jaworski of Wausau West, she's only a sophomore. She breaks the 400 record every time she sets foot on the track. So she's, borderline legend already, and she's got two more years left. And then Ken Bednarik at Rice Lake doing the same thing on the boys' side in the 400. He's a junior, so we expect him to he crushed a record from 1990 and he'll probably do it again next year. So there's some really high-level athletes. But, yes, Kimi Davra caps an incredible career at Whitefish Bay, accomplishing something else that she hadn't done yet, and leaves with 10 state titles. That's a lot of medals to wear to college. I mean, when you're moving in into the dorm, is that awkward when you got your 10 medals around your neck? She is going to Michigan, the University of Michigan. She's in the Big Ten. So, and then, yeah, that's
– The other thing that I paid attention to after muting your account for the rest of the weekend – was it West Dallas Central Brothers that
yes.
ran together?
I loved it. Yeah, so Kelshawn and Kelvon Johnson, identical twin brothers, are born 2 minutes apart. Kelvon is older, but Kelshawn has been a little faster. And in the 110 hurdles, Kelshawn had the fastest time in the state all year by a lot, by like 0.2 seconds or something, which in the 110 hurdles is a ton. He had the top sectional time. But in the final, it was Kelvon. Kelvon won the race, beat his brother. His brother took third. Kid from Bayport named Cordell Tinch, who also, by the way, had probably, I would say, the best state meet of anyone on the boys' side. Maybe Bednarik from Rice Lake has to be in that conversation, but just, I think he won 2 state titles in the field events, took second in the high jump, second in the 110 hurdles, so that's impressive, needless to say. But yeah, Kelvon took first, Kelshawn third. Kelvon came back and took second in the 300 hurdles. Identical twins. You listen to them on my recorder. There's no way you can tell them apart. They have the same voice. They're built exactly the same. They look the same. And that was just a cool story. A little awkward to try to talk to both of them at the same time because you kind of feel bad for Kelshawn. But obviously he was happy for his brother and happy for the whole situation. So very cool to see that. And West Dallas Central, I mean – They don't get a lot of state championships. This is not a usual thing for them. They have a pretty good wrestling program, but overall, West Dallas Central doesn't collect golds like your alma mater Arrowhead or some of the other schools in our metro.
What are you talking about?
So I'm just happy for programs that don't frequently win that do win. I like that.
Yeah, we're kind of in a nice little sweet spot today. Wednesday is like a nice little sweet spot where state track and field is over. State golf just wrapped up yesterday. State baseball sectionals just had their doubleheaders yesterday. So right. Those are all over, all before state softball starts tomorrow. Boys tennis, I believe, what is it, individual or team is this weekend?
Yeah, individual's done. Team is this weekend,
there you
right?
go. Yeah, so it is all happening fast and furious here. And my favorite part, and I've done this with some stories that I've done recently on, I can't remember. Menominee Falls softball is one of them, and some other stuff. But just like, oh, and Marquette boys golf, where they're doing all of this, and oh yeah, they have like graduation and like their final high school exams ever to worry about. Where with Menominee Falls, I talked about them. If they make the final, it's how I started my story. Like they might have a bit of a scheduling problem. Some of them might miss graduation, to which they said we will happily skip that ceremony. So. It is all happening right now.
It happens every year at the state track meet that kids competing on Saturday frequently miss crossing the stage. And that's gotta be tough for a lot of those kids, because I'm sure for a lot of them that is a major achievement. I know that, I think some of the ceremonies maybe Skype in with those athletes briefly.
Wow.
I would love it if the timing matched up where you could like watch the finals of the 100-meter dash or something and, you know, like, oh, and graduating with honors. Oh, he just won a state title. That would be cool. I don't think that you could quite pull that off. But, yeah, we run into that every year with the way the athletic schedule works. And like you said, not disappointing for the Saturday athletes that are competing for state titles in any of these sports. In softball, Oak Creek, Menominee Falls, and Germantown are all going to get underway Thursday. And
at 8 a.m. for some of them.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, Goodman Diamond is one of those state tournaments that frequently gets rain in the picture, and it's the only diamond they play on. So a little bit of rain goes a long way to messing with the schedule. I have seen a game end, and actually Arrowhead was involved several years ago, at, I want to say, 1:15 in the morning, legitimately 1:15 in the morning. So unfortunately, that's just part of the equation. But
yeah, I mean, they have 7 games scheduled each day, right. Thursday and Friday. They start at 8 a.m., 10, 12:30, 2:30, 5, 7, and 9 p.m.
You got 4 divisions. You got to get through that stuff.
Five
divisions, yeah. You got to get through that stuff. So, is softball just 4? I'm confused now.
Softball is 5.
Man, I can't keep up which ones went to 5. No, I believe
you. How dare you insult Wasaki and Blair Taylor playing?
I'm not insulting them. I'm having a hard time remembering which sports of ours have gone to 5 divisions. So yes, that's something to think about.
Like soccer used to be 3 up until what, maybe 2 years ago?
Yes.
Just large, medium, and small.
Yes, and golf is 3. Am I right?
Well, golf is 2.
Golf's 2. You're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
2 wrapped up yesterday, and golf is one that I've never covered just due to scheduling conflicts. Like it's a Monday, Tuesday event, and the show that I host, Sports Weekly, premieres on Tuesday. And so, like, I could maybe fit Division 2 in there because Division 2 wraps up at like 2 o'clock, but Division 1 doesn't wrap up. I was sitting there literally putting my child to bed after his bath. And my wife was wondering why I kept going on my phone is because I was constantly refreshing to see what was going on with Arrowhead and Marquette because they were coming down to the wire. It was fun to kind of refresh and see what was going on hole by hole because they were tied with, I want to say, like 3 holes left, 3 holes left for their top pairing. So I think they had 4 overall holes that hadn't been reported yet or hadn't been played yet. And then Arrowhead went -2 in the final 3 holes and Marquette went +3 and Arrowhead ended up winning another state title in golf.
Arrowhead has won 7 state championships in boys golf since the merger in 2000, but this is the first time in their history that they've had an individual state champion who is a freshman. I think he's the first freshman at all to win since 2002. Pearson Hunt is his name. We knew his name even last year. He came into high school with sort of some fanfare as a golfer, as much as that goes for boys golf. But yeah, he was looked at as a standout coming in. Still not sure that was like a state championship level. I don't know if anybody saw that coming per se, but, just an incredible embarrassment of riches for Arrowhead. They are constantly way up there. Marquette did win it last year. And then those two are in the same sectional. We talked about that on our last show, I think, just how loaded that sectional is. Mm-hmm. And state-ranked teams like Tosa just missing the field and Homestead having to battle the top 2 teams in the state. But honestly, it's kind of nice. The 2 best teams in the state going at it again. That's what happened. The 2 were Homestead and Marquette, or I should say Arrowhead and Marquette, for the state championship. And Arrowhead pulls it out. Bennett Knappick, the lone senior. He's a very good golfer as well. Lone senior on that team. So they will be back. I promise you.
Oh, yes. Arrowhead. You are something, aren't you?
You are. You produced J.P. Cadoran. Congratulations for that. And you are now the reigning state champs in boys and girls golf. Remember, girls golf won the title, and Emily Lauterbach, the sophomore, who will be back for 2 more years, she won the individual state title. So Arrowhead has a combined, 5 years remaining for golfers that are reigning state champions. And they have team titles to repeat. And Arrowhead girls, by the way, won the title in the fall by 51 strokes. So let's think about that for a minute.
And this is just a segue, not a continuation of a certain theme. Arrowhead baseball also won in sectionals. That's not continuing the Arrowhead theme, just more of Arrowhead will play Burlington in the quarterfinals. That was last year's state final match, which I'm kind of bummed because I won't get to go to state baseball next week because
it's on a Tuesday.
It's on a Thursday, and what else is on a Thursday?
Oh, you're talking about the state championship. That 8 a.m. Tuesday game between Burlington and Arrowhead, though, is on a Tuesday.
It is, yes. But Thursday is the U.S. Open.
Yes, so that's exciting.
I won't be in attendance at state baseball, which is a weird thing to say.
Yeah, I will be out of town for the U.S. Open. I, oddly enough, will be golfing myself, golfing in Michigan, but I will not be here for any of the U.S. Open festivities. That is certainly something on our radar. If you want, you should check out past Initial Reaction podcasts. I talked to Gary D'Amato, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel golf reporter. He's a lot of things. Golf reporter is one of his fortes. He chatted about the course, about the things to look forward to. That's I thought that was a pretty cool conversation. But yes, it's finally here, announced approximately when we were in our teens that Erin Hills would be hosting the U.S. Open at some point in the future, and it is finally here. We're a week away.
You're not terribly wrong there. I believe it was 2010 when it was officially announced, but even in 2008. When they held the Women's Amateur Public Links tournament, there were rumors about it, and really the USGA was involved from day one, from even when the course wasn't even built yet, the USGA was consulted about what would make it a US Open course. So we were actually just there this morning. We were shooting our preview show, which will air on Sunday. Everybody has some sort of preview. Everybody's making this pretty big deal, which is really cool. So just a plug, just set the DVR. You don't even have to watch it. Just set the DVR. You'll get around to it. But I was thinking about it as I was driving back, of just because there's going to be the parking hassles and stuff like that, how people are now being shuttled from a half hour away, which I think is the right way to do it. I mean, that, you know, everything is a two-lane county road out there. You know, that's not exactly friendly to the greater mass. And I'm just thinking about, like, if I would tell people that it's a must-attend event. And I'm not sure that I would. Like, I think it's going to be amazing. My love for Erin Hills is well-documented. I think it's a brilliantly special piece of land. But I also think it's going to come across just as special on TV as it would if you're among the 35,000 people walking every day. Like, I don't really know if I would consider it a must-attend event. And that's kind of weird for me to say. I've never really had that thought before.
Yeah, I hope it does, because the pictures are certainly pretty cool to look at. So I hope the weather's right. I hope the course is looking good. I mean, they spent so much time on it. How did your last round there go? I know you were part of the media day contingent. How did you do?
Very well. I had a 86 through 17 holes, and then
no, you didn't.
I swear to G, it was one of the best rounds I've ever played in my life.
You had an 86 at Erin Hills. That's crazy. How many mulligans?
Holes. And none at all. And the remaining hole was a par three. So I'd like to think that I would have broken 90 for maybe the first time in my career at a course like Erin Hills. So, but I think that just tells you how good the caddies are. I swear to God, the amount.
Wait, you had caddies assigned to you?
You get two caddies per foursome. Yeah.
Okay. And
that's usually how it goes.
They just drive the cart and they'll be like, yeah, don't use that club.
No carts. You have to walk.
Okay.
No, but they give you distances of where everything is, and they know everything about the course. Like, they know how to properly play the course. And it's really funny, because even by the second hole that we were playing, he was already telling me, like, which club to hit and which shot to hit. I'm like, wait, even I don't know my distance, like, with my 7-iron.
Right.
I know that I should be hitting my 7 or my 6 or whatever. And he was just like just from a hole and a half, he already knew what I should hit. And then it goes without saying, those greens are insane. And having a caddy read those greens for you, I mean, he saved me at least 10 strokes. So
the greens are just deceptive? Is that why they're so insane?
It's fast. I mean, it's where you really, you kind of hit the ball and then just let it do the work. It's not like any sort of other public course where you're hitting it firm and you're kind of telling the ball where to go. This is where you need to read the green and you touch it and then it'll run on its own.
Okay.
And that's what the USGA wants.
When you cover this event, what is it going to be? Madness? Do you sense that this is going to be something where you get like, are you looking for stories out of the golfers, or are you looking for stories out of just the people that go?
Personally, no. For me, it's not going to be madness, because during the championship rounds, Thursday through Sunday, we're not allowed to shoot anything on the course.
Got it.
We're just waiting, not in the media tent, but there's kind of like a little area just off the 18th green where they kind of, they'll get off the green, they go sign their scorecard, and then on their way to the big media tent with every other writer and everything else, there's a little quick quote area that they call it, well, they call it the pass. And that's kind of where you'll be. Like, I'll basically be running back and forth between the 18th green and that little quote area. That'll be my day on Thursday and Sunday, probably.
Right.
And then as far as, like, the stuff around the tournament, all the outside the rope stuff, like, that's what, you know, like, Fox 6 is for. You know, that's what all their news crews are doing. Like, in the reality of the situation, I'm not going to have that. You know, in my show next Tuesday, there's going to be Packers minicamp. There's going to be you know, high school baseball. There's a lot of other things going on that I'm not going to sell my soul and do that gas station a mile away from the course and how it's faring. You know, that's not really me. So
I'm trying to imagine you without a soul compared to the one that I know already. It's hard to imagine there's much to give there, but, so you briefly mentioned the Arrowhead baseball. We'll jump back to that. Arrowhead did qualify for state baseball. They also qualified for state tennis, team tennis. They'll be there with Kettle Moraine, two qualifiers for the first time out of the Classic 8. They'll both be playing in the quarterfinal matches on Friday at Nielsen Tennis Stadium in Madison. Congratulations go out to...
Not a traditionally strong tennis program out at Arrowhead.
Oh, no, they're good. Or at least they have been the last few years. I don't know about when you were there. But, no, they're solid. They're great. They've been great the last couple of years. I don't know. I mean, they're not going to compete with Nicolet and Marquette if you're talking about statewide. But they got it going on in the Classic Eight, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And then congratulations go out to Robert Krill of Brookfield East. He finished the season undefeated and won the individual state tennis championship that came this past weekend. He actually was talking about skipping his senior year at Brookfield East, or at least the last semester, to enroll early at Wisconsin, where he's going to play tennis, and decided he just, you know, wanted to stick around and do one more year of high school tennis, and won the championship. He lost last year to his teammate in the state final, David Hornifer. So this was his opportunity, and decided he really wanted to do it. And he did. So that's pretty cool. Brookfield Academy duo wins the D2 doubles title. So that's a look back quickly at state tennis. We are halfway, three quarters of the way through the spring postseason here. So soccer, like you said, is coming up, and softball starting on Thursday. It's pretty much the end of the line, JP. We have hit the end of the road in the 2016-17.
It is madness, and then summer baseball is still going on. I kind of thought it would lose momentum, but I think for now it's still holding strong, and then that ends. That season already started. I've been trying to get some features done with some teams. They play nearly every day. Nobody plays on Sundays, but other than that, they might get one day off between games. I mean, it's insane what they're doing. They play probably 4 to 5 times a week.
Yeah, that's always been true. It's just the way that the schedule works for them. They're allowed to play a ton more games than the spring teams do, and it's a little hard to cover for a weekly and for your purposes as well, because the second you write something, it's already outdated because there's another game. And, you know, it's not without daily baseball coverage, which, of course, we are not providing. You don't get that sense. So that will be something that comes up by the end of July. We'll have state champions in summer baseball as well, and then we will get right into football.
Friday,
we'll
July 21st is state summer baseball, and Monday, July 31st is the first day of practice. There is a 9-day break in between summer and fall.
There was one year when they were trying to get the schedule squared away where there actually was a weekend between the summer baseball tournament. They since moved the summer baseball schedule around quite a bit to make that work a little better. Yes, it was an interesting turnaround for athletes who were coming back to school the following year.
Yeah.
Let's talk Milwaukee Brewers. That's a hot topic of conversation. The last time, I think the only other time we talked about the Brewers, they were bad because they played 1 week of baseball, and we were, of course, writing them off as we were expecting to do. They are 3 games above 500 as we record this on Wednesday afternoon. They are tied for first place, a virtual tie with the Chicago Cubs, which I'm sure is surprising to everyone involved. I was wrong about a lot of things about this team, and I don't know how you feel about it, but I can make a list of 5 things, JP, that I was dead wrong about as it relates to the Milwaukee Brewers. And do you want to hear them? Should I list them for you?
Of course.
Well, the first thing is, I think I told you this, I thought the corner infielders were going to be a disaster. I thought Travis Shaw had shown not enough to be a guy that you could rely on, and I thought the Eric Thames experiment was interesting and a good move in a cost savings perspective, but I obviously thought that he was going to struggle. I didn't think that that would translate at all. They have combined for 25 home runs to this point, and though Eric Thames has struggled to a degree, he's got a 994 OPS, so that is not a struggle to a degree. I know that his April was insane, but he's been fine. Travis Shaw's got an 869 OPS. They are awesome, and more awesome, and I don't know if anybody saw that coming. I don't know if you saw that coming. Maybe you did.
No, not really.
No. I think all of these things I'm listing are all things people didn't really see coming. I have been out on Jimmy Nelson from the word go going into the season. I felt his age 27 year last year was an indication that he was not going to be a big league pitcher. His whip was 1.5 plus. He was, you know, allowing basically a base runner and a half every inning, which is horrible. His FIP, which is sort of a peripheral stat, but it was well over 5, which is bad. You know, compare that to ERA, it's a similar comparison there. He's basically he was supposed to be a bad pitcher, and he was. And I thought he was too old to ever get better, or at least I thought so. And now he has had some struggles this year, particularly in like a 3-start stretch. I want to say that was late April into early May. But he's ridiculous. He's so good. And You know how there's all those stories about guys who come into camp in the best shape of their lives? We did not hear that with Jimmy Nelson, but it legitimately happened. He came into camp in the best shape of his life, and it is translating. He's not walking anybody. I think he's got 16 walks so far. He had 86 last year. He's on pace to have about half of that this year. He hit 17 batters last year. He's hit one this year, so he's on pace to have a fourth of that. That's a small sample, obviously. But even throwing more to contact, he's not giving up more hits. He's given up about the same amount. And he's cut his walks in half, 4.3 per nine innings last year, 2.2 this year. So it's crazy, and his strikeouts have gone up. So this has been an absolute revelation in recent starts for Jimmy Nelson. I don't know how you feel about him. I mean, I was so out on him, and now I'm just excited. Like, I think, man, he's a really key component for what's going on going forward.
Well, like, the Friday game against Kershaw, like, that is enough to reinvigorate anybody.
No doubt.
I mean, that was just so fun to watch, mainly because it was so hard to believe that this was happening, because we haven't seen a lot of those glimpses. I can talk about it later if I come up with my five things, but with the rotation, like, we're seeing a lot of young pitchers, because we're seeing up and down performances, which is a sign of inconsistency, which is a sign of young pitchers. And I feel like we shouldn't be seeing that anymore with Jimmy Nelson, Willie Peralta, who, by the way, isn't even in the rotation anymore. With all these pitchers, you feel like they should have turned corners already, save for maybe Zach Davies. He's maybe the one young guy that you can cut some slack to. But the other guys have been so up and down, which is so surprising, because you'd like them to be over that by now.
Yeah, I agree. And I think one of the things that is not on my list, but something I was wrong about that has been bad, is that I really expected Keon Broxton to take a huge step forward. I mean, not really a huge step forward. I thought he was pretty dang good last year. I don't know if anybody realizes how good he was, but he has not been able to keep up those numbers. He's only reaching base 30.8% of the time. He's not slugging the ball super well, in my opinion. His defense has been okay. And I thought that I didn't really have an opinion on Jonathan VR, but I don't think anybody saw this coming, where he's, hitting 207 and reaching base 28% of the time. I don't think anybody saw that. So that's been a downside. And with Ryan Braun injured, it's kind of amazing to me that the three top position players from last year, and I really think that's a safe assumption, the safe thing to say, those are your three best position players from last year. And they haven't produced. And the team is still three games above 500 and in first place. That is crazy to me.
Yeah, it's been a team effort. That's why. It's been when guys like VR and Broxton had really slow starts to the season, it was guys like Thames and Shaw that were carrying them. Now, Thames has slowed down a little bit. Braun's been out of the lineup. It's been guys like, Eric Sogard carrying the team.
No kidding.
And Domingo Santana has just been fantastic lately. So it's been a thing where it hasn't been an all-star, save for Thames' first couple weeks. Has been one guy. It's been purely a team effort. It's been incredible.
Domingo Santana is another thing I was very wrong about. I assumed that he would be a guy that was decent but would ultimately be replaceable. And in fact, outside of the year, there was no question in my mind that at some point the outfield this year was going to be Ryan Braun, Keon Broxton, and probably Lewis Brinson. And now I'm not sure, because Santana's got 10 home runs. He's hitting 274. He's got a 364 on base percentage, which is the best of any regular except for Eric Thames. I mean, the guy went from a strikeout machine a couple years ago, just dramatically improved his plate discipline last year, has continued that to a degree this year, and that really surprises me. I thought he was injured a lot last year, and I thought the injuries were sort of they seem to be nagging in a way that suggested to me that maybe he just wasn't gonna develop into a full-time player. Kind of hard to explain, but it felt like maybe there was more than just the injuries. Maybe his ineffectiveness later in the year was just the fact that he was struggling, and maybe he wasn't looked at as a long-term piece. But now, I mean, he's again one of the better hitters in the lineup, so you can't take him out. My fourth thing is Chase Anderson. I mean, that's fair to that anybody. I think thought Chase Anderson was just a placeholder in the rotation, but the guy takes a no-hitter into the eighth. His velocity has increased dramatically. He has gone, his ERA is below 3. Again, this is his age 29 season. So, like, I didn't think there was room for the guy to get better. Not that guys don't get better late in their 20s, but usually what you see is what you get after a few years of MLB experience. But his hits have just dropped, and I think it's because his stuff is better. His velocity is better, and he's able to limit base runners. His walks are about the same. He's cut his home runs in half, and honestly, like, I don't even know what to make of him anymore. It used to be I thought he's just here until they find someone better or someone younger to take his place. Well, that's not the case at all anymore. Now Chase Anderson goes to the Hill, you think, yeah, the Brewers have a really good chance of winning this with this baseball game.
Well, you know what changed with him? I mean, which it clearly is impacting his performance. He had a kid. And we once you have a kid, your performance in all aspects of life just drastically improves.
That is so false. I can't even begin to tell you how wrong that is. That's so wrong.
Pretty much performance in every aspect of my life is like out the window bad since I've had children. But, you know, I guess some people are able to rise to the occasion, JP.
Good for him.
Yeah. And I guess the last thing is just the NL Central in general. I thought the Cubs were markedly better. I still think they are, and I still think they will be. But and everyone did, so that's not weird. I thought the Cardinals were going to be better. I thought the Pirates were going to be really good. The only team I wasn't afraid of was the Reds. I thought all three of those other teams were going to pound on teams like the Brewers. And obviously the Cardinals and the Brewers still have this weird thing going where the Cardinals win at least 98% of games played between the two teams. But they are not a scary team at all to this point. And so the Brewers have a lot more wins on their schedule than they maybe I thought they were going to have just by nature of playing competition that isn't as good. Pirates had one of their best players hit with a long suspension for using one of the banned substances, so that absolutely plays into it. But the NL Central is available, and right now I think the Cubs will eventually run away with it. I still do, but the Brewers are taking advantage of everything. I mean, they're good, right?
No, they're in first place.
You don't think they're good?
Well, they're not. I mean, they're three games above 500. That's not a good team. I mean, it's better than 500, but they're not good. Nobody's claiming they're good. Nobody with a right mind is saying they're good. They're just in first place.
I don't know anymore. I mean, I believe that.
JR.
I believe a team, once you hit Memorial Day, I'm not saying that I think this team is going to the playoffs, because I do not feel that way. But I think they're clearly better than I thought they were. I think they're going to be in this for a while, because, and I know this is sort of like, this is just what is perceived because I watch the Brewer games, but you see those meltdowns. Friday was a tough one, the Kershaw game, you know, that could have gone either way really. Saturday, that meltdown. They've had a couple major bullpen blow-ups. I think it's obvious that Carlos Torres and Neftali Feliz are not quality bullpen arms this year and probably shouldn't be on this roster anymore. I think when you replace them with guys at AAA, some of those things don't happen. I just wonder. I mean, they should be better than they are. They're underperforming their run differential. They should actually be even a little bit better. And right now, that is good enough to be a team that can fight for the pennant at the end of the year. I think they're solid.
And why is their record right now good enough? Only because the Cubs have underperformed. The St. Louis Cardinals have underperformed.
Sure, but
if the Brewers were in the NL West, we wouldn't be talking about any of this because they'd be so far buried in fourth place that it wouldn't even matter.
Is that right? Is the NL West really that good? Yeah, I guess Absolutely. It is. But I think people feel the same way about the Diamondbacks.
If they were in the NL East, they'd be 25 games behind the Nationals.
Sure, they would. Of course they would. But they would be ahead of everybody else by a lot. They would be a solid second place. At which point, I mean, yes, right now the wild card doesn't look like something that's truly attainable. Four games back, I suppose, 3.5 of the Dodgers and Diamondbacks, second place teams in the NL. And I think that there's also a sense that the Rockies and Diamondbacks can't do this forever either. Maybe that's not maybe true with the Rockies. I think they're a pretty good team through and through. But the Diamondbacks, does anyone believe that they're going to stay 10 games, you know, like on a pace where they can be 10 games above 500 all year? Maybe. I don't know. There aren't many teams above 500 in the National League, and the Brewers are one of them. They are, to me, one of the top 6 to 7 teams in the NL, and that's pretty close to the playoffs right there.
It is, and so, again, I mean, I maintain my position. I don't think they're a good team. They're a first-place team, which is also why I'm not trying to be negative, and I am just trying to purely enjoy this right now. I really am just trying to say, you know what, they are a first-place team. And I'm enjoying the fact that they could win a lot of games that they're playing right now, mainly because, like you've said, there aren't a lot of good teams in the National League. So I come off as a little negative there, but I don't mean to be, just in the fact of they're a first place team. They're not great, but I'm having fun with it.
Yeah, definitely. And if nothing else, it enables the Brewers organization to give the prospects, sort of the future of the organization, longer in the minor leagues to develop and work on aspects of their game. There's no clamoring to get them up here for the most part because they're not needed right now. They've got the guys in place that can actually win baseball games. Yeah, you're right. There's still probably a reckoning at the end of this, but the longer it takes for that to happen, the more it gets baked in. I mean, even in 2014, we were starting to see signs of wear and tear at this point of the season where they had that really hot start, and then it was sort of that slow fade to the end. I guess we could say that we've seen that recently here.
They had a five-game losing streak.
Yeah, I guess you're right. You're right. We have sort of started to see that here. I am more optimistic about this team than that team, oddly enough. I guess it's because there are these surprises. I assumed this rotation would be terrible. They're now at a position where you look at their numbers and they flat out are good. They're not great, but they're good.
I totally admit that there are so many other wins that this team could have had out there that even though they're three games over, they could easily be seven and nobody would even think twice about it. I understand that there is still room for improvement, but you're banking on a lot of unproven guys to do so.
This is true. If they are to make the playoffs, there will still be need to be more surprises, which is something you cannot count on. And again, I don't think they're going to the playoffs, but this has been a nice surprise in the summer of 2017.
And if it's almost any other professional league, they would be a playoff team. You know, if it was hockey or basketball, they would be among the top eight. You know,
I would
feel very confident in this team finishing, well, maybe not very confident, but pretty confident in them finishing in the top eight. Football, you would need to be top six, which is, I believe, where the 2014 Brewers finished in that collapse. I think they finished sixth like two or three times, which is just crazy the way that we judge teams by whether or not they're a playoff team. That's always bothered me. Anyway.
Yeah. I want to say that 2014 team ended up like one or two, well, it wouldn't be one, but two games above 500 or maybe at 500. No, they were two games above because they were the only other above 500 team in the NL to not make the postseason.
Yeah, so it's weird the way that's judged. I still think they'll be, you know, pretty good. I don't anticipate them dropping off and being last in the NL, but I just don't think they'll be a playoff team, which is why I'm enjoying the crap out of this first place right now.
Absolutely. All right, JP, we've kind of touched on anything else from on your show this week that we need to know about or coming up.
You need to know about the Aaron Hills preview on Sunday night. It's at 7 o'clock. We got Gary D'Amato as well, Chuck Garbedian, who's a radio golf personality.
Yes.
Some comments from the USGA and all over the place. And it's fun. We're putting it together now. We take most of it today. We have a pretty good plan in place. So Sunday night at 7 is a big thing I want our peeps to watch.
Lots of stuff going on at Lake Country Now, mycommunitynow.com. You can find all my state track coverage. Find it on my Twitter account. It's probably best. I link to the page that has all the stories. Kimmy Davra of Whitefish Bay, the Johnson brothers at West Allis Central. Talk to Jared Jones of Kettle Moraine, who's going into the Marines. He was second place in the pole vault. On graduation day at Kettle Moraine High School, he leaves to go to San Diego for basic training. So that was a cool story. Talked to Menominee Falls pole vaulter Cameron Jemison, who gashed his hand in practice, broke a pole, and needed 8 stitches and still took third in the pole vault. Not sure how that was possible, but he pulled it off. So lots of cool stuff. Check all of that out. Also, a story at WauwatosaNow.com from Andrew Grumman about Austin Jones, formerly of Wauwatosa West, now of University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. He came back to school after getting drafted last year, the Major League Baseball draft, and he's put himself in a really good position to go much higher this time around. The MLB draft begins, I want to say, on the 12th, I think, next week, Tuesday.
It does, so next Monday night.
Miller
Park covering it.
There you go. So that is something to keep an eye on. Not saying Austin Jones will go in the first couple of rounds, but he's definitely going to go fairly high. So you should check that out as well. My Preps Alcove this week looks back at state track and some of the impressions I had as well. Lots of fun stuff at Lake Country Now and mycommunitynow.com.
So after you're done with state track, you say that's the impression that I get.
It is. Good 90s reference. You know I love the 90s. I am strongly against the return of Zima, which is the more recent 90s discussion that's been on the table lately. So just so we know where I stand on that.
Fair enough. Are you pro Xenon, girl of the 21st century, though?
I don't know what that means. I will also be at state softball on Thursday. So you could follow me on Twitter at JR Radcliffe. That's with an E on the end of Radcliffe. And find my updates on Germantown facing off with Wilmot and Oak Creek meeting Menominee Falls.
Terrible. Zetus Lapidus. I'm out of here.
What is that? Is that like a superhero or something?
You know what? If you don't know, that is a problem major.
I am not a millennial like you. I'm not like you, Peter. Yeah, right. Okay?
Don't look up Xenon and thank me later.
Is that like a xenomorph? That's like the alien creatures?
You're making yourself sound old. Just look it up.
So old. JP, even though I hate you, it was a wonderful chance to chat with you again. Thank you for joining me on Initial Reaction.
I'm depressed. Later.
You're not depressed. Get off. Go away.